This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Writing can be therapeutic, and reading makes us all feel less alone. These aren't very original ideas, but they bear repeating because they are so true. They underscore the work of Owen Lewis. Lewis is a psychiatrist and works with the Narrative Medicine Group at Columbia University. The physician professor turned poet has published poetry widely. In his third collection, Best Man, Lewis brings us 23 poems, one for each year of his brother's life. The book has been called a contribution to the field of recovery studies. In his interview with TPR's Yvette Benavides, Owen Lewis discusses the inspiration for this collection, narrative medicine, and the way we access social justice through the study of literature.
The collection of poems called Best Man is an extended elegy to a brother of mine who died over 30 years ago from an addiction. I had thought that this issue, my feelings about my brother were well past, but apparently not. And in many ways, this was a book that found me and kind of tapped on my shoulder. And it was very much an opening up and a reexamination of not only my brother's life, my life in relation to his, and I think finding a way to put him to rest more comfortably. So he was a difficult person, and as he became addicted, stole from the family, had a life, I think, that he probably didn't want to have, and imposed so much of this on the family that at a certain point I became much more protective of my other brother, my parents, and less sympathetic to him. But I think that in many ways that didn't sit well with me, and this book comes out of revisiting that.
How did those poems find you? Do you recall, were there certain moments?
This wasn't the first time I had tried to write about my brother. It never quite took hold. I then had occasion to meet with and then subsequently work at greater length with Ed Hirsch, who's truly a wonderful poet and had just finished writing an elegy to his son Gabriel. The name of the book is Gabriel. And as it turned out, I hadn't seen that book yet, but both his son Gabriel and my brother Jason were 23 at the time they died. So there was a kind of shared energy. And he at one point said, I think there's series here, a cycle of poems, and it was just a kind of a tap on my shoulder, and I was off and running with it. This whole set was written probably in a matter of 3-4 months. Wherever there was a wrinkle in the writing, when I looked more closely, there was another whole poem there. So it kind of opened up like an accordion, one after the other, kind of from the inside.
Did you resist entering
Not
those
at this
memories?
Point. No. I think once they started, there was just some readiness. I can't completely explain it, though. Why now?
Well, you're a physician and you're a professor. And
yes.
You also teach with the Narrative Medicine Group at Columbia University.
Yes.
What can you tell us about narrative medicine, its purpose, what it accomplishes for health professionals and for the people that they treat?
Well, I think there's a big trend in medicine away from doctors listening to the stories of patients. I think if you go back 50 years, the main source of data for physicians was the history they could elicit from their patients. And in the pre-electronic age, doctors would write the history down. And in the listening and the writing, I think there was a great deal of reflection and thought and delving and set up conditions for patients to want to tell their story. Well, as we've moved into a more mechanized medicine that is often bound by time, doctors listen less, patients talk less, and doctors think and reflect less. And I think the overall level of care plummets. I recently had an eye problem during the summer, and my living brother and I tend to have things in tandem. I said, you better get yourself to an eye doctor and have him look at your retinas also. He said, no, I've been. I said, no, go to an eye doctor. So it turned out he did have something of this problem, and the doctor's recommending a certain procedure. My brother's questioning him, and he said, you know, if I were you, I would have stopped talking 7 minutes ago and just said yes. That's pretty horrendous. But it's not, you know, it's not all that unusual. I mean, very often patients don't tell the thing that most bothers them. It has to be brought out. So I think narrative medicine and where I am mostly involved in it is at this point in the medical school. And we teach close reading of poems and short fiction, reflection, brief writing, so that the capacity for reflection is right up there with anatomy and physiology. I think that it's needed to bring back an element of medicine that's missing.
I absolutely agree with you, and there's something about just opening, cultivating that empathy. Writing's a two-way street, and in a way so is reading, and so you can write on these topics that encourage that empathy and that sort of ascribe human dignity to everyone equally.
Absolutely, right, because it's really when you can feel something from another person's point of view, there's inherently dignity in that.
Mm-hmm. And those resonances, right? Feeling less alone, feeling mm-hmm. like your story matters too. And Owen, would you read one of your poems?
Sure. I'd like to start with the first poem in the set. It's called So. And in many ways, this sort of sets the stage for where I begin in this set. So, I am still mad at you. Every week another call from a pharmacy, a burnt-out Bronx neighborhood, or Brooklyn. Percocet, Dexedrine, shopping lists, benzos. That last visit, you took my prescription pad, sold it. I refused your calls. From Florida, from the ICU, frantic, your girlfriend overdosed. Our grandmother told me you were okay. She cooked you a pair of fried eggs. I've never known how to think about your end, so often I just don't.
How do you feel reading that poem?
It's hard, you know, I mean, because this is the poem of an unwilling mourner. This is the poem, there's anger in this poem. There's not, the starting point is not empathy, but what the addict does to someone. I mean, here I was a young physician, and of course, you know, my brother would come over, and then afterwards I would be getting these calls all over the place. You know, it was unfathomable to me that he would actually take my prescription pad. I mean, that was an assault on everything positive I was trying to do. So, yeah, I set up a limit there.
I feel as well that there is empathy. There is empathy just in terms of what how a reader can respond to that resonance, that recognition of I am still mad at you. Mm-hmm. And the poem is, yes, the speaker ticks off the worst of it, and at the end, the final line, so often I just don't, but sometimes I do.
Right. There is that implication, isn't
yeah.
there? Yeah.
It's very powerful.
Well, thank you.
I wonder if you would read one more.
Why don't I read Advice?
Mm-hmm.
This is with a subtitle, Advice on the Jailhouse Steps, Court Place. if you visit someone in jail, hold on to the handrail. You'll leave part of yourself there. You can't actually give something to the other person, like a pack of lifesavers or a note from your pocket or some dollars. There aren't window bars you can reach through to shake hands. It's plexiglass with a circle of little holes, so what you leave has to pass that barrier. It might be a look that tries to be kind, but is really a lot of questions that can't be answered. It's not a bunch of words because it's noisy and confused, and everybody else's words mix in. It will be something from inside of you, like a lung full of air you've brought from outside. It could be spring and warm and full of color, or winter that is crisp and ice blue, but when you pass the season on, you'll take a season in that's full of very mean things that will fill you up and be inside of you and make you think you should be there too. So you won't think your time's up until the guard taps your back because 20 minutes are over that seem like 20 days, and the doors close and you're outside in the air of the season you brought inside, and what's in and out or right and wrong aren't clear. And when you stop at the deli for a coffee and tuna sandwich, you don't know how you passed a bill to the cashier or how she passed you change and why she is smiling or how your hand could lift the cup past the barrier or the sandwich right up to your open mouth.
The details are so vivid, so I'm assuming this... Did this really happen?
Yes. Yeah. This is my brother was in jail. Visited him and experienced what I try to capture here: this profound disorientation that happens because you still love the person, and somehow this what you take in, what you give out, you sort of take in that whole jail environment and this utter confusion that when you're leaving, you can actually move in freedom. It's quite staggering. I recall so clearly that experience of not just being there, but it was really the leaving that was so hard.
Owen Lewis is a physician, professor, and poet. His latest collection, Best Man, is published by Dos Madres Press. Owen Lewis will read from his book on Wednesday, October 28th at 7:30 at Our Lady of the Lake University. The reading is part of the inaugural event of the Social Justice Reading Series at Our Lady of the Lake University's MA-MFA program in Literature, Creative Writing, and Social Justice.